Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 145, recorded on December 14th, 2011. Enjoy! Let's get into
it. Let's start recording.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, go.
Go. Go. Come on, Michael, do it.
All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. I grabbed the carafe of coffee right before we started, so...
I was saying I thought this was, well, we're not supposed to talk about that, right? I thought this was a beer show. I was
someone like two years ago told me I went with the beer. Yeah, we were told like 2 years ago that we shouldn't talk about beer because we sound like nerds who are aspiring to be cool because we drink.
Really?
I believe that was the reasoning. I don't know. It was one person.
I'm at an age now where that's really not not a factor.
Yeah.
No.
It's almost exactly the opposite. I drink just because it's sad.
You drink because you have to get through the day.
No, yeah, that's
welcome
not how
to
it
my
is.
World.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of drinking, Jeff Gamut's here too from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
As always, it's wonderful to be here.
And you're drinking Knob Creek, you said?
Yes, I'm drinking Knob Creek tonight. Okay. But I just came from a holiday party open house thing at Boulder Digital Arts where I teach podcasting classes. And the beer table was never empty.
Oh, that's
and
good.
Believe me, we tried to make it empty.
Did they have a bunch of Great Divide over there, I hope? Because that would be awesome.
They may have. They had a really wide selection of beer.
When I come visit you, we're going to Great Divide.
Great Divide's a nice place. I've been there, and we will definitely go.
Cool. Well, I'm drinking coffee, so I'll be able to rein it in, hopefully.
you're the youngest guy in the room is the responsible one.
Yeah, that's the way it should be, right? So talking about coffee, we should talk about this neat coffee machine that was just, was it just announced, or I guess it was just recently picked up yesterday, the Top Brewer Coffee Faucet.
And yes.
It's called the,
so
it's called
this.
A coffee
like 50
faucet.
50 grand.
Yeah. Well, you
holy
know that.
Crap.
You know
50
it's,
grand for a coffee maker?
No, I don't know what it is. Of course, they did not release pricing.
Naturally, it's too expensive to release pricing.
But it's this thing you have to have it installed. It like mounts under your countertop, and then there is, yeah, like Michael was saying, like this faucet, and it's this stainless steel faucet, and then a little hopper for like your beans. You throw the beans in there, then it has a glass surface with light up touchscreen,
yeah,
where you tell it, I want, you know, a latte or an espresso or whatever, and it dispenses the milk and the foam and the crema, and you just put your glass under there and then it creates your coffee for you, like on the fly. And it has an iPhone app that you can control the whole thing remotely with.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's like a robotic barista.
I'd be very jittery all day if I had access to one of these, let me tell you. Oh, I'm looking at pictures of it right now. It's just... Hey, iPhone, why don't you make me a latte?
Basically, they're turning the Keurig to suck it.
Can you tell it to? Can we pipe in some soy milk instead of regular milk for me and Jeff?
I think you probably can put in whatever you want. You probably can have multiple, you know, variations of
some
milk.
Syrups?
It must have a refrigerator part of it too, where you load the milk. And basically, I mean, you have all the ingredients, and then it's like a vending machine.
Yeah.
So
a really cool one.
So, okay. So like, you're driving home and you're thinking, oh my God, I need a cup of coffee. So you whip out your iPhone and over the internet, tell this machine to make a cup of coffee and have it ready at whatever time. So that when you walk in the door, there's a cup of coffee waiting.
Oh, it does
that,
juice, I don't know. Too.
That would be awesome. You need to have the cup underneath the little spigot, obviously, before you left the house, though. That would be the only
problem.
Okay,
so this isn't like a Caractacus Potts thing where it's going to spin everything around and
No. It's
literally built into your counter. So imagine, like, you know, just this faucet sticking out the top of your counter. And that's all you see. You see the bean hopper and the faucet. And everything else is hidden under the countertop. And then the countertop itself is a giant touchscreen with the different settings and controls that light up when you touch them.
I think you can just get the brew unit. I think you can just get the thing, because they talk about by moving the coffee unit into a compartment, we achieve a quieter machine.
Oh.
And it looks like they have a couple different things, but yeah,
it has been uniquely
designed to be smartphone and tablet compatible, enhancing the user experience and opening up a world of opportunity in terms of cashless payment, loyalty systems. Oh, okay. So you can charge your friends when they come over.
Well, I think it's being targeted at offices, like office installations.
Yeah, they got to get this at the place I work.
You know, like the hot tech companies are going to have this.
Twitter's already got, I'm sure they've already got three. Don't they have a new office at Twitter? They just, because they got the new interface, they got the new app, and I think they have a new office too.
They do have a new office, but no one can get in because the whole system failed.
Hold up, what? Are you kidding me? Is it like a...
Yeah, I totally am.
You're totally kidding?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so cute when you can't figure that out.
Yeah, well, you trick me.
I totally predict this top brewer company, though, is going to have some sort of deal with Square, and then there's going to be this automated...
Oh, like, yeah.
These automated cafes that you can go in and use these things at.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Twitter, you guys tried out the new app, new Twitter app?
I don't know what all the hubbub is about. Someone could explain that to me.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened. As far as I can tell by not using it, but just hearing it secondhand, they changed...
Okay, well, I know what happened.
They changed the names of everything and changed the icons, so it's a little more confusing for people who know what stuff is about. And then they moved some things around to make it a little bit nicer. But so they changed replies to connect. They changed...
Oh, I didn't even notice
search
that.
Search to discover... And they changed timeline or whatever you called that to home, which I guess is, I think it just obscures everything a little bit more. But there are some legitimately good changes. The layout's much nicer.
Well, but yeah, can I say this about like the other crazy thing?
Yeah.
You're all babies.
Yeah.
Send me email. I'm happy to do it, but now I'm going to be ornery about this because, like, yes, it changed. All right. And I get upset when things change, when like major features and functionality change. But as far as I know, well, maybe I will have a thing to complain about. It didn't bother me. I mean, the connect is still a little at symbol.
Yeah. Okay.
Which
wait.
To me says the replies, right? The search is under a little pound icon. So I had no problem with that.
That's stupid.
Home is my timeline. Yeah, why they changed the terms? But who looks at the terms?
Dude, I think the icons made a little bit more sense. Granted, the Discover thing. Okay, so if you look in the app, you have two different functionalities underneath the search or discover, which is searching. And then you have checking out the trending topics, right? And searching for stuff. And you have these little suggested, the trending now. Right. Now, it's my understanding that you have to upgrade your app in order to get the new experience online to kind of happen immediately for you. I think they're rolling it out. They're staggering the rollout.
Oh, I hadn't heard that either. I mean, my online UI changed before I downloaded the
app. It did change. Okay, so Discover Now shows you not only search trending topics, but it also shows you magically what kind of stuff that you might be interested in, right?
The stories thing. Yeah, they're trying to do a little bit of that.
And I like that. You know, Flipboard is great for that because it gives you all that stuff that's not really tweets. That's here's a link to like yesterday I was looking at my Flipboard and I saw the coffee thing from Adam and all these different stories from Andrew WK and yada yada, and they're kind of doing that same
approach. Yeah, but I mean that's more of a legitimate complaint to me than they changed the design of the app. I don't know. It's a catch 22, and I was probably too harsh earlier, but I guess I'm responding to the fact that it seems like now the new internet thing to do is anytime any company, you know, changes the UI of their interface, everybody has to be up in arms. So are we supposed to stick with the same UI for forever because that's what everybody's comfortable with? Or, you know, I'm more upset when major functionality changes, or like this. And in this case, to me, they're deviating from the core thing that Twitter is.
Right. And see, that's right? That's my big complaint.
That's a problem.
Else. Yeah. But at the same time, I think, and again, you guys have used it, right? Yeah, Jeff, you've used the newer Twitter?
You know, I haven't bothered to install it.
Okay. Adam, so
I have used it. It didn't bother me. It didn't seem to change functionality. The one thing I just noticed now, though, is you used to have the whole swipe left, swipe right thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be there, a bigger deal to me.
It seems like they've really, I think they rewrote the entire application. I can't confirm that, but it definitely seems like a different app. And the one that
still sends tweets, and it still lets me read my tweets, and it still lets me do all the things that I need to do. I might have to figure it out a little bit more. And this goes back to what I was saying is like, do we have to just be irate that they changed the user interface?
No.
And like be super vocal and whiny about it? Or do we just go, you know what? I don't like this. And we get a different app. Which I think is the better way to handle it, which is what I did.
I think this is a better way to go.
Well, here's...
You know, so I took the opportunity to do the Tweetbot thing because they were very smart, and I love those guys who make all the bot apps because I have CalcBot and WaitBot and some of the other bots. And they quickly saw what was going on, reduced the price of their app to 99 cents, and I picked it up. So, and I've been using that
I've been
since.
A Tweetbot fan for a while.
Yeah. I haven't pulled the trigger on Tweetbot because it seemed like there were maybe a couple little features that weren't in it. See, Tweety, also known as the Twitter app of the previous generation Twitter app, is just, in my opinion, is just a work of art and just perfect. I love it. It has everything I want in there.
I think you would like Tweetbot.
I think you should.
Definitely. I think there were maybe just like a few little things that Tweetbot didn't have in it. They probably have it by now. And I may end up switching to Tweetbot. But so what it comes down to when a company does make a change like this, if they're adding features, changing things, they need to retain that core functionality that when I signed up, that's what I was signing up for. And if they're adding things to it, that's fine as long as it doesn't obscure what I wanted to do from the beginning.
Right.
So if they're
changing design, that's not a big deal, right?
No,
or changing
not.
I mean, labels on things, especially when it's obvious, still obvious what each thing or each area is.
And I think that's because I know what each thing is. Connect, I think that may be a bad word for it because it implies
more of a
permanent connection with whatever you're doing. Replies was a perfect word for what that was because that's what it is.
Yeah. Connect to me feels more like a term you would use when you're going to start following someone.
Yes, exactly. Home, sure, that works. Why not? Discover, it's okay. I think I think they're trying to focus less on the active searching and more on the passive discovering. That's fine. Adam, how do you feel about it ultimately?
I don't know. My biggest beef with it is it keeps recommending that I follow Bill Gates, and I don't know why it thinks that I want to do that.
No. Well, can you say no? Thumbs down.
It doesn't know me very well.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. It didn't seem like that huge a change to me. I guess I was more responding to the fact that why do we have to all, like, so vocally complain about it? Like, it's something that's horrible that's being done to us.
It's because I loved my Tweety app, and I feel like they're taking it away from me.
Well, I liked it, too. And again, if it was major core functionality that was really changing, like I just discovered the whole swipe thing, which that's a big deal. I agree with you when you were saying, you know, there's certain things that I signed up for that I really liked. I liked the fact that I could, you know, swipe the tweet left or right and uncover the additional functionality, the retweet and all that sort of thing. The fact that's gone and I now have to tap through, I can figure it out. It's not a big deal, but it was kind of one of the reasons I really liked that app over other apps, right? So that's a certain big deal, but I don't even know if I would complain about that. You know, at the beginning of the show, I have to confess, though, I complained about Gowalla. But the thing is Gowalla completely changed the focus and direction of what the app did. It doesn't do the same thing that it did when I signed up for the service. You know, they like changed it from like a Foursquare check-in thing to some sort of Tumblr/social blog posting thing where I'm supposed to go everywhere and post these, I think they call them stories. I couldn't even figure out what they wanted me to do after they changed it.
Okay,
to me, that's a more egregious, you know, change than everybody gets irate to when Facebook, you know, changes the UI.
Well, that's a completely different story because let's not go there. But with Gowalla. Gowalla was a service that allowed you to check in at places and see where your friends were going and earn points and that sort of thing, right? Kind of mostly a
Foursquare.
Like Foursquare. Okay. Now, what has it changed to?
I don't even know. Okay. That's the problem.
Yeah, see, that's part of the problem. What is it?
And it's like stories. And it's like, okay, wait, how do I check in someplace? Well, I don't check in really the way you used to. It's something completely different, and all the badges that I collected, they're all gone. You can't access them anymore. I don't know where they are.
Well,
that
you know,
sort of stuff. At the same time, I want to back up from this whole thing and say that I've been in that same group of complainy, whiny technology people that like, oh my god, they changed this. And even with the Gowalla thing, like, I feel bad even talking about it now because, you know what, the reality to all this stuff is, who cares?
Well, no, I don't think that you should
this
dismiss
is
it as
media BS, and technology is going to change.
I don't think you should dismiss it as a who cares situation because, from where I'm coming is, I want to know what goes through the heads of the people who make big changes like that. Not necessarily with Twitter, but more with situations like Gowalla, when you have users who sign up for a certain experience and you change the core experience of it is, it's clear that you're losing touch with your users
I think the answer was they got bought by AOL or something like that. Oh. Somebody told me there was something with AOL that went on and AOL's like it. You need to change it.
Well, then that's a completely different situation.
But that's just rumor and conjecture. I have not researched that, so I don't know what happened. But, you know, it's corporate. It's all the same thing. Corporate things get involved, right? So it starts off as this cool little project that a bunch of cool people are building, and then they get bigger and bigger, and then, you know, it's like, where's the revenue stream? Where's the money coming from? And then the whole thing changes
and this
all evolves, which is why I'm coming back to, you'd think we'd learn this and know this by now. And at the end of the day, yes, this stuff matters to us, but in the grand scope and scheme of things, does it really matter?
I think it does matter. It does.
I'm trying to gain more perspective in my life, and I'm hoping that our listeners are doing the same thing. It's this feels bad, but it's really not that big a deal at the end of the day.
The reason it matters, and I agree, it doesn't. It's not that big a deal at the end of the day. But if we're talking about people who are trying to make good products in whatever technology space, you really want to watch out for losing track of what you're trying to do with something.
See, that's where the big deal part comes in.
And now, so when something changes in a bad way, yeah, there are a lot of vocal people, and then those companies need to take a look at what those people are saying and actually listen and determine whether what those people are saying is just a little bit of resistance to something that's really positive that's going on with this thing, and you really are rooted in what your ultimate goal is with this product or service, or if you've taken a wrong turn and maybe you need to go back and rethink it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to be vocal, because maybe you'll get some positive change out of it. And we've seen a lot of that kind of stuff happening, even with Apple, a fairly large company,
well, yeah,
in the midst of these smaller companies, social networking companies, et cetera. It's good to be vocal, and it's good to get upset about certain things if you feel like you're being shorted, or that you're not, that your needs aren't being correctly met by a product that is kind of going off in the wrong direction.
Yeah, so, I think but at the same time, in a positive way, right?
Yeah, I like what you're saying in terms of
this whiny, you know, complaining on Twitter or Facebook it's getting old.
Yeah, I feel,
and it seems to happen like every time, and then there's like a big bandwagon and a big swell, and then it goes away, and then everybody's okay, and they move on. I wish we could get to the, you know what, we send an email to the appropriate people at X company, but we don't need to publicly, like, in most cases. I mean, there's the egregious things when Facebook does something egregious in its privacy policy, or,
sure,
you know, those sorts of things should be pointed out, obviously. But, you know, for the smaller stuff, the UI changed and I don't like it, go find a new app that better serves your needs.
Well, you know, it'd be...
Right? Support another developer who's doing the right thing.
Yeah, and that's the other end of it, is if something's going off in a way wrong direction, that's an opportunity for someone else to jump in and make it right, maybe. But yeah, it's good that we're talking about this type of thing, because Apple has once again listened to its customers. And so iOS 5.1 Beta 2 was released on Monday. And one of the most requested features has to do with PhotoStream. So PhotoStream is that feature that whenever you take a photo on your iPhone or your iPad, it goes out to all of your iCloud connected devices. And then we realize that you run into problems when you're taking a random photo of, oh, I want to just compare a price of this one thing at the store to another thing at another store, or just garbage photos or inappropriate photos that you don't want showing up on your Apple TV, what have you, because you can't manage what...
You mean the ones that your buddy took when you were passed out drunk at that party, and then
mostly
you get home and you're like, you know, hanging out with your friends, and then it scrolls by on the Apple TV.
Your mom comes over for Thanksgiving.
You know, I have yet, now that I have iOS 5 installed, I have yet to have a surprise at a party where I'm looking at photos later and I'm like, that's not my body part. Who is that? I mean, I know it'll happen eventually because that's how parties go, but
yeah,
not yet.
Uh-huh. So in iOS 5.1 Beta 2, you can now delete photos from your photo stream. I have not seen exactly how this works. Is it, Adam, you delete it from your camera roll, or do you actually have to go into your photo stream to delete it?
I would assume you'd get the photo stream.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, can't you get there from both places, though?
I think so. I'm still not on 5, so... Well, I'm on 5 on my iPad, but... So I guess that would make sense. So the way it works, photos taken using iOS 5.1 can be deleted from your photo stream on your device and will be removed automatically from photo stream on your other iOS 5.1 devices. Older photos can be manually deleted from your iOS 5.1 devices. So I guess there's some kind of issue with photos that were taken before 5.1, where or maybe they just don't want to enable it for those photos because the customer may not understand it. But either way, if you took it on something before 5.1, you have to manually delete it from all of those devices on which it exists.
I would think you'd have to do it from the library app. Yeah.
So, hooray. Now, of course, it's not out. We're still waiting on 5.1, but it's beta 2, and that feature is in there.
Well, the other thing that would be nice for them to add in the photo app would be just a toggle, like, little switch that just turns off photo stream, maybe under the options.
Oh, you think it's too hidden? Too many steps to turn off the photo stream? You're saying a temporary toggle?
The same place you would turn on grid or HDR. You know, you hit options and then it says grid on or off, HDR on or off. It'd be nice if it just said photo stream on or off. So and if you flip it off, then it just doesn't send to the photo stream, period.
So if you're saying you'd like it there as opposed to where it is now.
No, in addition.
Right. So you can do like a temporary turn off photo stream while I'm doing something.
Right. I'm gonna take a bunch of photos at this party. I don't want them going to my photo stream. Or I'm gonna, more appropriately, like you were saying, I'm gonna take a bunch of garbage photos because I'm testing something.
Sure.
Don't even put them into the photo stream because I don't want to deal with it.
Comparing whiskey prices.
Exactly.
Nothing. Yeah. I would do that. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. I like that, Adam.
Or the thing you're bringing up would be great if you could, almost like the notifications system from the photo settings, say which apps should send their photos to PhotoStream. But that's probably getting way more complicated than it needs to be.
Did I suggest that?
Well, in a way you did, because it's like, oh, if I take a photo with some compare pricing app, some of them save those photos to the camera roll, right? So yeah. Then they end up in PhotoStream.
Oh, right.
So...
yeah, I just do that with the camera. I don't use a special app for that. But yeah.
Definitely. You know, some of those scanning apps, or I have some apps that, you know, give you the option putting into the photo roll, photos, camera roll, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So
also included in beta 2, Apple has finally decided, and I wondered why they haven't done this yet, they finally decided to obscure the future devices. Hints of future devices in their software. So over the years, we've looked to property lists and lists of different items within the operating system, especially beta versions of the operating system, for hints at what's coming next from Apple. So we would get maybe an iPad 3.3 and say, oh, it looks like Apple's working on a new iPad, because it's clear that there are some software references here. Now they've added, I believe, what is it, a couple hundred garbage references?
That's awesome.
Have they added weird ones like iDevice 8.24, you know, sort of things to cover any future products that might not be existing products? Because I saw this story come out, and to me it just seems like, well, of course, after they bring out the iPad 3, which is, you know, X comma Y, they're going to come out with Z comma A, but that's the next iPad, right?
Well, of course, we're always looking for the next thing, but I think what this really tips off to us is that they're actively working on it, and it gives us more a little bit more insight into the timeline that we're dealing with, just a little bit, a little glimpse.
I think people are confused on the timelines. Look at this. Before the iPhone 4S came out, guess what? Apple was already working on the 5. Before the 5 comes out, people, Apple will already be working on the iPhone 6. And possibly they're already working on the iPhone 7.
Well,
so,
okay.
Of course they are.
Right.
It's silly. It's silliness.
But this
is what I'm saying.
This curbs the silliness, I think.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think
so.
We're going to have the same silliness.
We're going to have some silliness coming out of something else. Yeah, I haven't looked through the file.
And when they add item 101 to the 100 list, there's some new thing coming out.
That's the real one, yeah.
Well, I guess if anything, at the very least, it's made it a little more fun for those people who like to poke around in there.
Root around in the files. Well, and right after this came out, didn't some developers root around someplace else?
There are other places
where, like, oh, look, here's how we figure out what the real number is.
Yeah, there are other places right here that they haven't obfuscated that stuff. It'd be pretty hard, but
you know, if this was a video podcast, You'd be able to see me shaking my head.
Yeah.
They need to shut down the factories and hire a bunch of Oompa Loompas, and that's the only way they're going to keep these secrets from going out.
I thought they'd already done that.
Have you heard the songs? No, you haven't. No Oompa Loompas.
Nobody ever comes in. Nobody ever goes out.
You'll never hear those songs on iTunes.
No. No, you won't.
Speaking of iTunes, we got iTunes 10.5.2.
I don't like the sound of it. Oh, sorry.
And from certain short sources, we've heard something, something iPad. Okay. iTunes 10.5.2.
Wait. Short sources? You mean like people of small stature?
Little people.
Okay.
Oompa Loompas. from Oompa Loompas close to Apple, ... That's what we'll start hearing.
All right.
And then that'll be more or less believable than what we're hearing now.
Exactly.
Yep. There you go. Okay, iTunes 10.5.2 has been released, and what it includes is several improvements for iTunes Match and fixes an audio distortion problem when playing or importing certain CDs. I'm not aware of any of the audio distortion problems.
It's called MP3.
Okay. Well, I thought we used AAC.
No, I know.
Yeah, well, there's some people that don't get it. They still use MP3.
Yeah, they think that's better. Or they use Wave. I got to encode in Wave. I'm all about the Wave.
Well, BMP. I know how that is done. It could be better or worse.
Yeah. Okay, but improvements to iTunes Match. Honestly, I'm not sure.
I don't know what it does.
I don't
better.
Know what it does. I updated. I was really excited. I thought, great, man, iTunes Match kind of irritates me.
It's better now, though.
Is it?
100% less irritating.
It's better because they said it's better, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The only
Apple said it's better. It is.
Okay. The only thing that's really bugged me about iTunes Match lately is that it cleared out a playlist because I deleted some songs on one computer and redownloaded them through iTunes Match, and it removed them from a playlist, and that kind of made me upset. But otherwise, I gotta say, iTunes Match is friggin' cool. It's really great. I like iTunes Match. And one of my favorite things that happened a couple days ago, I was listening to a mix on I think I was listening to it on one computer, a computer that has big speakers, and I was looking through my library on my MacBook that has the same stuff. And I was syncing my iPhone, and I thought, oh, I want to listen to this. I'm getting ready for a run. I want to listen to this. Oh, wait, I realize that it's a little bit quiet as I'm playing it. So I'm going to do a volume adjust on it, on the track. And it was playing on the other computer. And as soon as I made the volume adjust, I would say within a few seconds, the volume jumped up on my other computer as it was still playing.
Yeah, because it syncs all the metadata.
And I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, that is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I wondered if it was going to do that. And I was very satisfied when I saw that happen. I don't like the fact that long songs can't be, or I guess large songs, so some anything over 200 megabytes you can't upload, anything under 80 kbps you can't upload or match rather, but for the most part I've been enjoying
it. Wow, that's
match.
Pretty harsh if your audio quality is that bad.
I have like two songs that way, and honestly I should just get rid of those.
Yeah,
I think Apple would say spend the $2 and rebuy them, Michael.
Yeah, I don't even need this song by Sum 41. So no other, you haven't noticed anything else?
They're basically saying that music is way too sucky for you to even own.
Yeah,
you need new copies.
Let us take that from you. So we should...
wherever you torrented that from, go out and kill that person.
That's not nice.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much your punishment for torrenting that song is the song you got.
And I said torrenting. I really meant Napstering. Right?
Yeah, that's much more accurate. I Napstered that.
Or LimeWire.
Well, okay, so if it
Probably.
Yeah. If it's like an 80 kilobit song, yeah, you probably did Napster it.
Yeah.
Back in the day. When we listened to 64 KBB and loved it.
Yeah, and we were glad for it. We had to listen to the music in the snow, uphill both ways, barefoot.
Indeed. All right, what should we talk about? Hey, you're looking to buy some stuff for Christmas. Maybe you have a grandmother like I do who is looking at getting an iPad, or you're trying to really hard to get her an iPad instead of letting your aunt give her a Windows computer.
Is this a commercial?
No, it's not. It's not. Oh, it sounds like it.
Really, I thought we were doing an ad all of a sudden. That was weird.
Yeah, no, I know it sounded that way. Apple, they have the refurbished models.
Mm-hmm.
They have some fairly cheap or cheaper iPad 2s available now. So they're at 16 gig. You can get one for $450. You can get 32 for $550. You get 64 for $650. So that's like $50 off each of those, I think, right?
That's still dang expensive.
It's better than, no. It's even less. $419. I'm sorry, $419 for the 16, $500 for the 32, and $600 for the 64.
Wasn't the Black Friday discount like $65 off?
I don't know. I didn't look.
On the iPads, that was the time to get them. That's still a good deal, though. I mean,
what do you think about
Well, for an iPad, full price is still a good deal if it's a device you're really going to use.
Yeah.
So true. Any Very discount true. Makes it a better deal.
Yeah. So what do you think about the rumor from Maki Takara that according to one of the Asian suppliers that supposedly provide parts for the iPad, that the case for the next iPad is going to be a little bit thicker?
I'm having a hard time believing Apple would go thicker.
Okay, Jeff,
not their modus operandi.
Yeah, your call quality is really bad right now.
Oh, that's awesome. And I bet it's not getting any better, is it?
Mm-mm, it's getting worse.
All right, hold on. Let me see what I can quit.
Adam, what do you think about this?
I think that...
Well, I think that
I think it's possible, and mainly because what we're talking about again, didn't we bring this up the last time that it was like 0.7 millimeters or something like that thicker?
We did talk like about it, and I think
it's a completely like insignificant amount of thickness, and the rationale for it is a completely technical one. It is... We're going to a higher resolution display. It's going to require a better, more even backlighting, and we need to add another LED bar, I think was what it was being reason behind it. So if there's a good technical reason, and if it's that small of a difference and does not impact at least Apple's cover, with the smart cover, which I think they're saying it doesn't, then I think it's... it's probable is what I want to say.
Sure. Yeah. Now, the only thing that, okay, so the photo that they're providing, I believe is from Alibaba. The back looks rounded. Now, if this photo is what they're claiming is the iPad 3 back, it's wrong. It's not it. Because the next
This silver pillow?
that might just be a silver pillow. You're right. But if it's a silver pillow, whatever it is, it's rounded. And that's not... The next iPad is not going to be rounded. The first iPad was rounded.
It's a Mylar balloon.
It's like an iPad Mylar balloon. Yeah. They're not going to go to a rounded back. It's going to be flat from now on.
Apple went away from wobbly backs already.
It's like rocking.
I don't see him going back down that road.
This is the Samsung tablet Apple wants Samsung to make.
Yeah, we should talk about that. Hey, Jeff, you want to hang up and I'll call you back?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, so you sent me an email about this. I actually heard about the Samsung tablet that Apple's lawyers would like Samsung to make. So Apple and Samsung have been going back and forth about Samsung copying the design of Apple's iPad. And at some point, I believe this week, or maybe late last week, Samsung...
I think it was last week, yeah.
Yeah. Apple's lawyers said basically, in order to comply with our copyrights, or our patents, rather, you need to make it an iPad... Well, not an iPad, but a tablet.
A tablet.
That is basically the opposite of the iPad.
I love
in every way. In every way.
Yeah, they gave it the interface. Add adornments to the bezel.
Don't make it black. Make it other god awful color.
Make it blocky and clunky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The overall shape can't be rectangular, and it doesn't have it can't have rounded corners. It has to have thick frames rather than a thin rim around the front surface. The front surface isn't entirely flat. It can't be entirely flat. The profiles can't be thin, and it has to be a cluttered appearance. And that's what they're allowed to make. Otherwise, they're infringing on their patents, according to Apple lawyers.
Okay, so when you read the list, it's really funny. But when you think about it, Apple is making quite a statement with the list that they provided to Samsung. And basically what they're saying is we're the only people that can make a device that's sleek and cool and thin, and everyone else is making these clunky, blocky things, and that's what you're going to have to make too because you're one of the other guys.
That was the piece that I read. It might have been the piece I sent you. What's the last thing that says something about, you know, this whole list is just arrogant? And I mean, it kind of reaffirms what everybody believes about Apple and Mac users and stuff like that. You hear a lot, right? And it's like, come on, this is just silly. I mean, it's arrogant and presumptuous.
Well, I'm thinking part of the whole thing is that Apple's legal team wanted to make it silly.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, because they were put in a position where they had to tell the court and Samsung, what is it that you can do that's different from what we do so that you won't infringe on our patents? And what a stupid thing to impose on Apple's legal team. Because basically what they're being asked is to tell Samsung how to make a product that they can sell. Well, why in the world would you tell your competitor how to make a product?
Right.
You wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so I think what Apple did while making their point about the quality of their product compared to other products, they also sent a message to the court, which is what you're asking us to do is kind of stupid.
Yeah. Well, and then the thing that I sent you, Michael, and I can't remember where it was from. Unfortunately,
Cult
I don't have
Mac.
It in front of me. Which site was it from?
Is the Cult of Mac.
Cult of Mac. Somebody did a mock-up Samsung tablet with like taking into Apple's design suggestions into account.
It's awesome.
So I thought that was funny. Yeah. I think this story actually came out several weeks ago. I just think we hadn't covered it. And when I saw the mock-up, it's like, okay, that's really hilarious. You know, it was like all bubbled on the back. I think it was an octagon shape with a bright orange frame and super thick, about 2.5 inches on the bezel.
On the front. LEDs on the front. Yeah.
Like the tablet no one would ever buy.
It's like a Buck Rogers tablet.
Yeah.
It's like a Windows tablet PC. Oh, wait.
Yeah, that's
exactly
what I just said.
The point. Right? Nobody bought those, right?
Yeah, how about that?
Ta-da.
Yeah, the UMPC. Yeah, that's kind of what this looks like.
Anyway. Cool. Yeah. But this, bringing it back to this iPad 3 image from Alibaba, that's it. I mean, it looks like the back looks like it's that rounded. Like it's like an airbag.
Yeah. That's a photo I have to call fakety fake on.
Yeah. All right. We have a lot more stuff to talk about. But before we do that, we got to talk about our sponsor. And this week, our sponsor is one that I very much enjoy. I've been enjoying for many years. That is audible.com. And you can get, if you haven't already, listen, I'm talking to you. That person, whoever you are, you haven't gotten Audible yet. You haven't tried it out. What are you doing? You haven't tried this out? It's free. You can get a free trial, audiblepodcast.com/WHC. I've been reading the Steve Jobs book, I would say slowly. Haven't had a lot of time to open it and read it. They just started Apple at the point that I've read it. And I'm really seriously considering getting the audio version of it. And if you want to get an audio version of any book, if it's available, it's on Audible. And the way it works is you sign up for your, I think I'm a gold member. They have a couple different versions that you can get. I'm going to check out the different plans that they have. But basically, you sign up for, I think it's 1, 2, or 3 books a month. Is that correct, Adam?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 1, 2, or 3 books a month, depending on, I think it's around like $15 for the gold.
Yeah.
I get 2 books a month and, well, you get 2 credits and those credits count toward books. Now you can go on, you can buy the books a la carte if you want. So for example, the unabridged version of the Steve Jobs book is $20. But if you already have the plan on Audible, it's just 1 credit. I don't think there are any books that are more than 1 credit. And
very few.
Yeah. So all you do, you sign up audiblepodcast.com/WHC. You get a free audiobook by signing up. You have to use your credit card, but you don't have to continue on past the month. So it really is no risk.
Yeah, you get 14 days to try it out.
Yeah, try it out. You download the book, and once you download the book, you're set. You don't have to worry about it. Even if you decide you don't want Audible anymore, you can continue listening to that book. Keep it in your iTunes. It plays in iTunes. It plays in your iPhone. It plays in your iPad. Basically plays on anything that you can conceivably load an audio file onto, and music will come out.
Yep.
And so I think the last time I checked the number of audiobook titles that they have, I think it's like 85,000. It's probably way more than that. They've been around for years, and like I said, I've had this thing for years. I love Audible. I have a giant wish list. One of the great things that they have available is any audiobook you ever get ever on Audible is available in your library. So you go to the My Library tab, you can see everything. And actually, over the years, they've improved the quality of some of the audiobooks. And those books that I bought in the past that had a lower quality, they actually allow you to download in a better quality.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And so you can keep track of all those books. You can see them all. You can re-download them, whatever. And they even have, this is great for iPhone and iPad owners. There's a wonderful Audible app where you can access all of your library. So you don't even have to go to your computer to re-download a book that you have. So all you got to do is you go to the website, pick out the book you want, or if you've already purchased it on your computer, just go into the app, start downloading it, and you can start playing it as it's downloading. So they have a great application for that as well. So and of course, because of the way that Apple has it set up, they don't allow you to have a little link that sends you to the Audible page, but or do they? Can you click on a button that sends you to audible.com?
From the
app?
From the app? I don't have the app.
Okay, I'm not entirely sure.
I just use iTunes.
Yeah, well, either way, I mean, you go to audible.com and there's a mobile version of the website, and you can actually, you can preview any of the books. Most of the narrators are very good. You can preview what the book sounds like, and it's generally from a little bit into the book, but toward the beginning, and you get like 5 minutes of a preview. So you can even preview a book and really determine whether you want to listen to it, and then go ahead and download it. or just say bye on your computer and then hop on your iPhone and get in the car and start listening to it. It's really great for those times where maybe you're like driving or you're working out or you're just doing something where you can't keep your eyes on a book, but you don't really have the ability to do anything else but hear something. It makes those times where you'd be wasting time, times where you're actually getting some stuff done, you're reading a book. So it's really cool. And if you're listening to a podcast, you already know how nice it is to listen to things. So check it out, audiblepodcast.com/WHC. If you haven't tried Audible yet, just what are you waiting for? Just try it out. It supports WHC too. So there you go. We thank them for their support of We Have Communicators. And with that, you guys want to talk about the, do you guys see the Telenav announced a fully HTML5 browser-based navigation turn by turn? Did you see that?
I'm looking at it right now, but that's awesome.
Whoa. It's crazy. So here, let me read a quote here. Similar to Telenav's award-winning GPS navigation application, the HTML5 nav service will include full color moving maps, audio directions, and automatic rerouting if the driver misses a turn. Telenav's HTML5 navigation service will be free for both developers and consumers and will support all major mobile platforms. And of course, we're looking at some screenshots via Mac Rumors of it running in Mobile Safari. And I believe what they're planning to do is, here, let me read another quote from one of the co-founders. This is an enormous amount of added value for any mobile location-based website or app focused on travel shopping, local search, deals, and more. With one line of code, you can give your customers one-click access to premium voice-guided turn-by-turn directions to any location, including hotels, restaurants, merchants, blah, 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 blah. So this is really cool.
Yeah, brilliant. They're going to sell this to a bunch of businesses for their mobile websites.
Yeah.
That's where they're going to make their money.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so if I mean, you think about it, you're poking around, you see maybe you're on some social networking site or what have you, you want to get to a place, you just tap on the take me there and it opens up in Safari and whoa, there's turn-by-turn directions right there. You don't have to worry about what applications the person has on their phone. It just works
in
the browser.
And this just further, you know, shows once again that Apple was maybe just way ahead of their time when it came to apps. You know, iPhone 1, the whole thing was supposed to be web apps, right?
Yeah.
And with HTML5 and some of the new technologies, you know, we're seeing some truly amazing things. And it's funny that it's just ironic to me that it took Apple moving to a closed app environment and taking a 30% cut to suddenly force all these developers to go, oh, well, maybe this web app thing, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah,
maybe I can build it. A web app and charge whatever I want for it and keep Apple out of the loop. And hey, this actually works. Wait, and I can deploy to every platform that has a WebKit based browser or any browser for that matter. But you know, most of them being WebKit, I think helps on the standards front from a web development standpoint. So yeah, it's cool. It's very cool to see it happening. And what's great for me as a developer is when you see things like this come out, it just pushes everything forward. So HTML6 is going to be even more amazing.
You know, I love that when you're looking at apps like this or web pages like this, it appears as if it's any other application. And I just think that's amazingly cool and awesome for developers because finally you have a viable option for creating ones and deploying on multiple platforms without having to rely on something that takes you to that lowest common denominator like Adobe Air.
Yeah. And I love that it's HTML because I mean that was the whole original vision, right? Was for sharing scientific papers and information and doing it in a universal way that would just be supported across any kinds of devices that could support the underlying protocol. So it's cool. Very true.
Speaking of apps, we talked about this a few weeks ago that Netflix had promised a new and improved interface for the iPad, for their iPad application. And today they released their updated app. And the reason I've been actually putting it off throughout the show is I've been trying to get logged in. I think a lot of people have been updating and trying to log in, and finally I've been able to get in. It looks pretty good.
Is it iPad only?
The new interface?
Yeah.
You know,
it updated on my iPhone. I haven't played with it yet.
Yeah, me too. It looks like they might have tweaked it a little bit on the iPhone, but certainly the more significant update is on the iPad, and it does look really good.
Here's my thing. You can spruce up the interface all you want, and tell the studios stop being lame and like let them have content. That's what's frustrating me mostly with Netflix. And I watch a lot of stuff on Netflix, and there's a lot of great stuff on there. There's a lot of great BBC stuff. There's a lot of great TV shows. I think I'm watching, I don't know who told me about Warehouse 13. It was either David Sparks or you, Jeff. I don't remember who, but I started watching that. So, I mean, there's good stuff on there, but I do get frustrated every once in a while. I'm going on and looking for something new, and it's getting harder and harder to find stuff that I'm interested in watching. And it doesn't seem like they're getting new content all that quickly. So I think they're going to end up with a content problem. Yeah.
And the crappy thing is, I think that's the studios and not Netflix.
Yeah, it is. No, I'm sure they would love to have tons of stuff, but the studios are being lame. And it's funny because the studios won't even release like old stuff that, I don't know. I don't know where the rationale is. I guess I don't understand the economics behind all of it, or it's either that or they're just being lame, which is what my assumption is.
I think they're being lame.
You know, because I've gone out and looked for stuff from, you know, not new stuff, like stuff that hasn't been around. And it's like, why is this not on Netflix?
Yeah. Why can't I get Good Burger delivered to my house? That is a good question.
Yeah.
Why it's not even available on DVD. You can't rent Good Burger anywhere.
It's weird. Yeah. You know, I know there's weird licensing and there's deals and everybody's got a hand in something. So you got to get all the right approvals and get your ducks in a row. But it's stupid. And I think we're moving away from that. And the other story that was this week that I think is related to that is the CK. Is it CK Black? Is that the comedian?
Louis CK.
Louis Black.
Louis Black.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Why did I get the CK in there?
Louis CK and Louis Black. I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway.
It was clever. He put out
a comedy video, and he did it DRM free, all on his own, through PayPal, $5. And I think it's been very successful. And he's selling a lot of copies. And I'm hoping we see more of that trending going on.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, screw this. We're going to put out what people want for a reasonable price and do it well, and people will buy it. That's the thing.
People want to pay for good content. Yeah. They just don't want to feel like they're being treated like criminals.
Yeah.
Because then they'll be more inclined to just flip the bird and say, well, fine, you don't get your money. I'm just going to enjoy whatever I want.
Yeah, so I get more frustrated when I go someplace I'm paying for a service or want to pay for a service and I can't get it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that does the exact opposite. I think that drives people back to, you know, and then I read the story about Amazon wanting, or the ultraviolet people wanting to push Amazon into that system. And it's just like so the wrong way to go. I got that Harry Potter DVD with that ultraviolet crud on it, and this was the lamest thing ever.
What's the ultraviolet club crud?
It's horrible. Adam has an awesome story about it, though.
The movie studios, it's digital copy. So, you know, Apple had pushed digital copy with iTunes, and I got a bunch of DVDs that I purchased that had iTunes digital copies on them, and it was awesome. You got a code, you went to the iTunes store, and you got the digital version of the movie along with your purchased DVD, so I could sync it to my iPod, I could sync it to my iPad. Warner Brothers bought Flixster way back when, and then they're also part of this new Copy Protection Alliance, or DRM Alliance, whatever you want to call it, Rights Management Alliance.
League of Buddies.
Called Ultraviolet. and it's the new digital copy. And the way they're doing it is you buy a DVD. So Harry Potter 2, or the last Harry Potter movie, not 2, the part 2 of Deathly Hallows, came with this ultraviolet digital copy. And what you had to do is you have to go download the Flixster app, and then you have to put the code in there, and then you have to watch the movie within the Flixster app, and it gets managed completely in the Flixster app. And they have it for iOS and Android and all that stuff, and that's fine. But
no, it's not.
Whole things like Adobe Air, I mean, it's not what people want, is what it comes down to.
You know, the crazy thing about
the digital copy, but you have to jump through 27 million hoops to get it, and really all I want is an iTunes code so that I can download it from iTunes and sync it on my devices.
The crazy thing about that situation is, you know, the biggest problem with any sort of DRM or trying to get people to use this secured content or go through and actually pay for what they're doing is ease of use. And the crazy thing about this situation is there was a much better solution already set up for them. It was much better before. Why would they have to change it? You know,
because it's Apple, and they don't want it. The thought of Apple having any kind of power in any way is just so frightening to them that they'd rather PO all of their customers and drive us all back to piracy. So, I mean, the end of that story was I got the digital copy. So Deathly Hallows Part 1 actually had the iTunes digital copy. Part 2 had the stupid ultraviolet thing. I tried it. It sucked. The playback sucked. On my Mac, if I wanted to play it, I had to download another app, which required installing Adobe Air, which I didn't want on my Mac. I don't want Adobe cruddy Air on my system. But I tried it. You know, I gave them that the experience was so awful that I emailed them, and a lot of people emailed them, their support team, and the way they resolved it, they sent everybody who complained an iTunes download code.
Yeah, how about that? Well, okay.
So I got an iTunes copy, but wait, I got to tell you one more thing. But even right before that, you know, just to prove the other point is, you know how easy it was? So before that happened, I took my DVD because I didn't know if they were going to give me an iTunes copy or not. I took the DVD, I put it in my system, I ran Handbrake, and in 30 minutes, I had an iTunes compatible copy.
Yep, there you go.
So that's the other part of this thing is they're just going to drive everybody back to what I call personal piracy, which I don't even consider real piracy, because if they had just given me the darn copy, digital copy that I wanted and paid for in the first place, and they ultimately did, so I have to give them a minute amount of credit for that. A
little bit of credit.
Sure.
But they should have never changed. Your point earlier was exactly the same. They had a system that worked. It was working for them before. Everybody loved it. Everybody was happy. And then they had to muck it up. It kind of goes back to our earlier conversation, right, about Twitter and Gowalla and, like, why are we tweaking a perfectly fine thing? And again, it's because lawyers and bigger companies and money gets involved and everybody loses their mind.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So one of the big problems I see with the whole ultraviolet thing is that the technology that the studios embraced is fundamentally flawed. Now, granted, Adobe does make some great products, but Adobe Air, I don't think it's one of them. It's unstable, it eats memory, and it is not a good implementation. And so then what do studios do? That's the technology they embrace because it's not Apple.
No, they wanted the technology that they could control, right?
Right. And of course, you can control Adobe Air because it's basically a runtime environment, and it compiles on whatever platform it's on, and away it goes.
Well, and just license it, you know. They're not licensing iTunes. They're having to probably pay a cut, which they probably hated.
Right. And so instead of doing what's good for the customer, they do what they can to try and just cut Apple out. And in the end, they have to give people iTunes codes. Huh.
A huge cost. I'm sure they had to pay a lot more than if they had just done the deal with Apple to begin with. Like per copy.
Right.
Which is just hilarious. All right. Have I ranted enough in this episode? I think so.
Yeah, maybe. It depends on what else we have to talk about.
Picks.
Picks?
Is there anything critical that we missed this week?
HP turning WebOS open source.
Cool. I think that's a good thing.
I think it's fantastic for competition, and that's what drives innovation.
I don't think it's going to matter.
No?
No.
Maybe not.
I think the whole thing with WebOS going open source is HP's way of trying to find a way to salvage the platform without having to spend any money itself, which is not the same thing as creating an open source platform so that anyone can use it to benefit their own products. There's a big difference. And I think HP is thinking, well, let's give this a shot. At least it won't cost us anything. And that means we have a platform that HP isn't really interested in supporting. But if someone else wants to invest in it, that they'll go ahead and take advantage of that. And I think ultimately that means that WebOS is kind of doomed, which really disappoints me because I've seen WebOS as the potential serious competitor to the iPad.
It makes things interesting, if nothing else, though. You know, so it gives it life. Yeah, at least it's not totally gone. So I guess that's what I'm hopeful about, is that maybe something comes out of it. And HP said maybe we'll do some hardware, or it's very likely we're going to do some hardware with it. And I agree with you, Jeff. I think it was one of the viable technologies that, in many ways, I think was better than Android. It's just Google. You had the juggernaut of Google pushing Android, and that seems to be the way things went. And who knows what's going to happen when Windows, you know, hits the scene. But, you know, that hasn't been anything yet. So at least there's still another competitor out there in the environment. And you know, maybe it gets legs, maybe it doesn't.
I would like to see it take off and be a viable competitor. I fear, though, that it won't be.
Yeah, me too. So.
All right. So picks. Jeff, do you want to go first? Yes.
Sure. I don't mind going first. All right. So my pick this week, I believe, is something we have picked in the past. And it's Starwalk.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm picking specifically Starwalk for the iPhone because it's the free app of the week at Starbucks. So if you go into Starbucks, you can pick up one of the little cards that has the redemption code and get it for free. It's like a $3 application, I think.
Oh, and it's worth every penny, too, if you pay for it.
Oh, absolutely. But considering you can get it as the free app of the week at Starbucks, you might as well. I just love how on the iPhone, it takes advantage of the GPS and the gyroscope, and you hold it up, you hold your iPhone up, and it shows you what you're looking at in the sky. And so as you move, it changes to show whatever it is that's right in front of your iPhone. So it's a really great way to be able to figure out what it is that you're looking at in the night sky. It's a great way to learn constellations. And it's a really fun and cool way to experience astronomy without having to invest a lot of time learning from books. It's just a very cool application.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this application, especially it's interesting that you bring it up tonight because last night and tonight are, I believe, the Geminid meteor showers.
Oh, right.
Are peaking tonight.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is and this application is aware of those meteor showers. I think there were, I think it was the Perseids earlier this year.
Right.
And so it'll show you. You. And I believe you can even search for it. You search for it and it'll point you in the right direction. And of course you can move around in it and of course point your phone up toward the sky and it will orient you so you can figure out in what direction you need to look in order to see these types of things. And it actually helped me out on Sunday too, during the lunar eclipse to figure out where the moon would be, where I had to look because it was really hard here for me to find that, because in central Illinois, it was very, very low on the horizon when it started to eclipse, and I don't think that it was visible when it was fully eclipsed, but I was able to see a little bit of it. But yeah, Starwalk is fantastic.
And it's a nice price. On the iPad, it's a couple bucks more.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe it's only $3 on the iPhone, to be honest. I think that's an incredibly cheap price. But yeah, if you can get it for free from Starbucks, go do that. Otherwise, if you miss out, you don't want to go into Starbucks or you just want to pay for it, $3, it's great. So check it out, Starwalk. Adam, what is your pick this week?
I am actually picking a technology that is built into iOS 5. And it's something, I was at my Mac user group meeting and I was helping this guy with his iPhone, and he had this little icon on the screen. It was kind of dimmed and grayed out, but it was on every screen that he went to. And it was like this little overlay, this little square icon with a circle. And I was like, what's that? And he said, oh, somebody just put this on my phone. It's a friend of mine who says they use this all the time. And I thought, oh, no, you know, somebody jailbroke his phone and put some weird little kitschy app on it. Turned out to be it's Assistive Touch. Do you guys know Assistive Touch?
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the accessibility system that's in iOS 5. So if you go into settings, and I just covered this as part of the latest MacCast member episode, so I'm going to get my plug in too. But I was like looking at this thing, and so you tap this little circle and it brings up this little interface in the middle of the screen, and it has gestures, device, a home button, or like a virtual home button, and then a favorites button. And so once you turned it on, what you can do is if you tap the gestures button, you'll see little hands and it'll show 2 fingers, 3, 4, or 5 fingers. When you tap one of the fingers, say 3 fingers, it puts 3 little virtual fingers on the screen, and then you can use 1 finger to make 3 finger gestures. So that's kind of cool. If you go into the devices, it gives you access, virtual button access to some kind of built-in features. So you can mute and unmute the device. So this is particularly useful if you're like me and you like to have the slide lock button, like on my iPad, normally set to be rotation lock. I can use this little virtual button to activate the mute and unmute rather than having to, you know, do the double tap and slide over. Is that where you do it? Or use the physical volume rocker and rock it all the way down, whatever you want to do. So it's just another way to have a virtual button. You can do the same thing with the screen lock.
Yeah, that's great for shaking
volume up and down. One that I particularly like that's in here is shake. So you can go into devices, tap the shake button, and it will simulate a shake as if you shook your device, which in some apps, that's how you do undo, and they don't have an undo button. And I'm always worried, especially with my iPhone, I'm going to like try and be undoing something and the iPhone's going to go flying across the room.
Yeah, right? I think even more so on my iPad. I think it's
kind of awkward to shake the iPad, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you can do it from this little virtual button. And then home is obvious. It simulates the home button. And then the other cool one that I thought was really cool, though, is the favorites. If you go into favorites, there's one favorite in there by default called Pinch. And it brings up 2 little dots on the screen, and you can grab one end of one dot and then just pull on it, and it kind of rubber bands out, and it acts like a 2-finger pinch. But then you can also add in your own gestures, and these work kind of like macros. It gives you a little recorder, and then you can record any kind of gesture movement on the screen, save that as a favorite, and then you can go in and in one tap activate that. So when you tap it, it brings up those touch points again on the screen. You touch the screen again, and it does that multi-touch action. So like I was able to go in on the iPad and do the 4-finger swipe left and 4-finger swipe right gestures. And so now if I tap that button and hit one of those, I just tap the screen once, and it does that automatically. So that's just kind of fun. I was just kind of playing around with it. But I would imagine for some applications that have different gestures, you could kind of record macros, little gesture macros, and just like play them back through this interface too. So it's designed for for as an assistive technology, but I think that it's something that you know, regular mortals like us or regular people can also access. Because everybody's mortals, that was a not a great thing to say, but you get my point. Is that even people that don't require assistive technologies can take advantage of this. And I said this in my show. I think that's one of the great things about iOS is they don't segregate people. All of the assistive technologies are available to every user and vice versa. Every technology that's built into iOS, Apple tries to make available through the assistive technologies. So they really complement each other, and I think that's awesome.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. I got to play around with this for sure.
Yeah, I had never seen it before, and it was on his phone. He was an older gentleman, and he kind of had, you know, some issues with accessing some of the smaller buttons and stuff like that. So he had it turned on for that reason. But yeah. I was looking at it, I'm like, wow, there's some things in here that I could really use, or a lot of users could benefit from. So it's a good thing for people to know about.
Yeah, totally. So you can check that out under Settings, General, Accessibility.
Awesome. There's a lot of other cool technologies in there, so that's kind of what I covered on the show is some of the assistive technologies that, you know, everybody might want to leverage.
Yeah, like I use the triple tap on my phone and on my iPad to zoom in on things.
Zoom functionality is great.
Zooming's, you know, I use that a lot on my Mac with the control scroll in, scroll out, and it's great to have that on the iOS too. So.
Yep.
So my pick this week is something that I had to use this weekend, which is the Kiwi Wi-Fi. And what this does is you've got that, you know, when you bring your car into the shop and they have the ability to scan your car's computer, that mystical, you're not really sure what they're doing, but you know they have some way to interface with your car's computer. And mm-hmm. get information off of that and clear codes and figure out what codes are. Maybe you get a check engine light. You don't know what's going on. It just says check engine. So Saturday morning when I was out looking for the eclipse, it was Saturday, right? I'm pretty sure it was Saturday. It was real cold. And I'm not sure if me running the car hard when it was cold caused this to happen. But on my way to work later on, I hop on the highway and the engine temperature is just going down. And I think that's weird. It should be, if anything, it should already be warmed up and maybe be warming up if I'm driving it on the highway. And I started losing heat and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And later on, my car didn't really start too well and I got a check engine light. So I took it home. I plugged in my Kiwi Wi-Fi, and that plugs into the OBD2 port underneath your dash. I think all cars after maybe 95 have this. Mm-hmm. And what this allows me to do is read my car's computer on my iPhone. And because what it does is it transmits that information over Wi-Fi. You have to have a special application. I have the Rev application. There are several different apps, and you can check out all those different apps at the PLX Kiwi website, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I use Rev. It's $40. And the cool thing about Rev, it's, I would say, pretty...
Did you say $40?
It's $40.
Cool.
There's one called Check Engine that's free, and that's probably what's best for most cars. If you get the PLX, you get the Kiwi Wi-Fi, and all you really want it for is to just do some basic things. You want to check the check engine lights every once in a while, see what's going on, maybe clear out a code or whatever. You can get Fuzzy Car, and that's free. But I use Rev, and it's great for more than just those codes because you can see what you can get a. You can make a virtual dashboard. You can pull in all these different gauges, such as, let me pull up a list here. So I can pull up performance one. So I get speed, RPM, torque, horsepower, acceleration, throttle, lateral acceleration, forward acceleration, fuel trim, intake temperature, fuel pressure, fuel trim, fuel consumption. So you can get fuel consumption averages and immediate fuel consumption, fuel level, engine load, engine coolant temperature, all these different things. And that was really great. So I pull up the engine coolant temperature for my car to see what was going on. And I also got to see what the codes were. And so I looked those up online, figured out what was going on. I was able to clear it out to see if it came back. And it's just, it's a wonderful tool that I keep around, keep handy. And I'm surprised that I haven't talked about it yet. It's just, it's a great thing to have if you like tinkering with your car. And every once in a while, maybe you get a check engine light. I've actually had friends, I see that they have a check engine light, and I say, what's going on with it? They say, oh, I don't know. It's been on for a while. And I'm like, are you crazy? You don't know what's going on with your car? There could be something wrong. You got to figure it out. You know, bring it over. I'll plug in my thing. I can scan it and figure out what's going on. So it's really cool to have. $150, works over Wi-Fi, interfaces with the iPhone, iPad. I want to say it works with other phones or what have you. There has to be an app. The issue is you have to have an app for it. So it definitely works on the iPhone and the iPad. So, and Fuzzy Car is the one that you would want for free. But the Rev app has a bunch of extra cool stuff built into it. So you can decide on which app you want based on your needs, but it's the PLX Kiwi Wi-Fi, and that's $150. So with that, you can find all of our show notes and the pics at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send feedback, any emails you have, questions, comments, etc. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send text emails, or you can send us audio comments. We love that. We have a couple audio comments still in the queue that we haven't been able to get to. So for those of you who have sent those in, don't worry, we haven't forgotten about you. We just haven't had the opportunity to get to that. Of course, our advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. And, of course, check out the, Audible Listener Gold free trial for 14 days. Of course, you can keep the book, even after you cancel, if you do decide to cancel, but I don't think you will, audiblepodcast.com/WHC to take advantage of that. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, at Jay Gamet on Twitter, and Zazzle.com/Jay Gamet is his store, and it's where you can find the We Have Communicators mug.
Yes, you can.
And thanks for being here, Jeff. And I don't know what's wrong with your audio quality, but
I don't know. I've been quitting apps and doing my best to not suck bandwidth, and I know there's no one else on my connection right now, so very weird. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It happens. You get some of those weird Star Wars monsters chewing on the cables, right? The ones that chew on the cables in the Millennium Falcon?
Minox. Oh,
Minox.
Yeah, the Minox.
You got some Minox.
Yeah, those bitches.
Mm-hmm. Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, MattCast.com. He's at MattCast on Twitter, and member.mattcast.com is his show, the premium show that he was referring to before.
Yep.
So check that out to get more awesome information on the accessibility
technologies in iOS and OS 10. Yeah. We dive deeper on that show into some of the tips and tricks and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So
check it out. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and I'm also at Lil Reviews. L-I-L Reviews is where you can find Lil Reviews, Twitter-sized reviews of various things. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.